to Paratrinity Radio. Your hosts, Mike and Ellie, plan to delve into the controversial subject of religion and the paranormal.
Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep.
Paratrinity Radio, where nothing is sacred. Powered by the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Paratrinity Radio for our special Valentine's Day episode. Well, really, there's nothing special Valentine's-y about it, but still. Or I guess if your significant other is some sort of demon, then you can kind of apply this to it. But overall, it's not anything to do with Valentine's Day. So I'm Mike. I'm one of your hosts.
And I'm Ellie, your other host.
And we have a great easy for me to say. We have a great show lined up for you tonight. Our guest is Father Andrew Calder. He is an Episcopal priest, demonologist, exorcist, and has been seen on a couple episodes of Paranormal State. Paranormal State, yes.
Yes. That's right.
I get all the different TV shows confused. And anxious to hear from him and his stories of the exorcisms and stuff. Did you have anything you wanted to add before I went on my little rant before we talked to him?
No, you can rant away.
Okay.
I'm good.
I always forget to say this at the end of the show, so I'm going to say it now. Next week we have Matt Oxley as our guest. I'm going to try to remember to say it at the end, but if I forget, then now you know. Next week our guest is Matt Oxley. He is an atheist. And the founder of RagingRev.com. And what was my rant about? I don't know. I didn't have it. So, never mind.
What a rant.
So, you have nothing left?
No, just other than that, you know, tomorrow's Valentine's Day, and everybody's talking about love and the beauty of love, or, you know, the how much it stinks, but I just wanted to let everybody know we're not talking about either one.
No, we're not. That's about all I have to say about Valentine's Day.
Well, we should wish everybody a happy Valentine's Day. Those that believe in it.
Hope everyone who celebrates Valentine's Day has a great day and stuff.
And to those of you that hate Valentine's Day, I hope it sucks for you. No, but, well, you know how it is. They walk around and say it sucks.
But do anyway. I need to play the disclaimer again, guys?
I do think Valentine's Day is a bit too hallmarky, which I don't like, but it's an excuse for a special day.
Name a holiday that hasn't been hallmarked.
Christmas? It's been hallmarked, but it's not a hallmark holiday. That's a true religious holiday. And there's others.
At one point, the celebration of St. Valentine was true. We just turned it into a lovey-dovey fest.
Yeah, well, I think Hallmark completely taken it over. All right, with that being said, I think we're ready to talk to Father Calder. So, with that being said, Father Calder, are you on the line?
I definitely am.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Do you want to, well, yeah, I won't ask that question. It's always a bad question.
You were going to ask if he wanted to introduce himself, weren't you?
Yes. That's always too open. It's not a good question. So let me ask you this instead. What got you involved in the paranormal?
Well, I tell most people mental illness kicked in, but I have to admit that this was before I got ordained. You know, I'd like most folks out there wanting to know, you know, do we survive after death? Is there something, you know, beside the realm we're in now? And, you know, got to looking around, got involved with some of the different groups in the area, worked with them some over the year or two, and then finally formed my own group and started, put up a website on the web and started getting cases and worked, you know, what I call mom and pop ghost cases. But I did find that over a period of time that a larger than average percentile turned out not to be little boys running down the hall, you know, Uncle Fred in the house, you know, seeing loved one that just passed away. It was something much darker, much worse than that. People getting choked, slapped, bitten, and in some cases even raped and sexually attacked. And wow. I'm going like, you know, wow, these people need help. But I found that there was not really much clergy out there at that time willing to work these type cases. They just did not want to touch them, didn't want to work with them in any shape, form, or fashion. So I was kind of stuck with a lot of these cases and not knowing where to turn to. And I did find a few clergy here and there that was willing to work with them and try to help them alleviate some of the issues they were dealing with. And over time, due to my frustrations of trying to work long-distance cases, especially in working with clergy and trying to, you know, consult with them and get them involved in helping the clients, I eventually went on to get ordained myself, which I first was ordained as a deacon, and then eventually several years later went on into the priesthood and became a full-fledged ordained priest in the Episcopal faith. And I'm fully given full dispensation and authorization to do exorcisms and deliverances by my bishop and archbishops within our order. And that's what I've been doing for the past 6 to 7 years. I've worked with cases from all over the United States, Canada, places like England, Ireland, Scotland, even places as far away as Haiti and Malaysia before. So wow. It just shows you how the wonderful power of the internet works these days.
Yeah, that is amazing at how well it works.
So it was your actual study of the paranormal that brought you into religion as you are today?
I would say it's probably a major determining factor for me going down the path that I did that got me involved with religion. Because one might say, in working these cases, your faith has to be strong, and by seeing these type of entities and dealing with them is going to make your faith stronger, whether you want it to or not, or you're just not going to survive in this field.
Right.
I'd say it's been a major thing for me being going down the road with religion.
So how did the church feel about you coming in as a former or current, as a paranormal investigator? Were they okay with that? Did they have any problems with that?
They knew when I came in that's what I had done for a number of years, and that was a stipulation that I would continue to do this work with or without the church. So, you know, they understood that for me to come in that I would still be doing the work, and I would have to have their approval on that, which I have to this day.
Okay, because I've heard a lot of churches have their problems with certain types of paranormal, certain parts of the paranormal field, yeah. So I'm always curious how different churches accept paranormal, paranormal investigators, paranormal stuff in their church, and so that's kind of why I brought that up.
It seems that a lot of it is just they don't necessarily want to advertise it. They don't. Some do seem to mind it, but some don't. They just don't necessarily want to, you know, have it on a billboard or a marquee out in Times Square.
Well, you have to understand these days, due to the TV shows and all the media and everything else, has drawn quite a large draw to these type cases and so forth, and if they have to take a real critical eye to anybody that's coming to them wanting help with paranormal type phenomena and so forth, because you get a lot of people that's got different psychiatric conditions, different medical issues, things of that nature, and you have to rule all those out before you can go in there saying, like, okay, they got a malevolent spirit, they got a demon or something like that, because if they don't, they're setting themselves up for liability issues. You know, and people are so happy these days that you really have to, you know, have all your P's and Q's in order to do this type of work, and you can't really do credence to your work if you don't rule these things out. I mean, I've dealt with people that's had paranoid schizophrenia, bipolar conditions, and a mix of a lot of other things that they thought they had something going on, but they really didn't. They had some psychological conditions that probably needed some type of medication for. There was nothing I could do for them, but you have to do your due diligence in this work.
Right.
So, with doing all that testing, from the time you get a call from someone needing help, how long does it actually take before you can really, I mean, if necessary, perform the exorcism? I mean, how long is the general process of testing them for all the different medical conditions and the other little things you have to do beforehand? Is that a long process, or can you make it a quick process if needed?
Typically, it's going to take a little bit of time because, one, they're not local to me. I mean, I have people locally that I could refer people to get quick results with, but if they're halfway across the country, then we have to work locally on their level.
Right.
And getting them to get psychological evals, you know, getting medical evaluations as well, can take a little bit of time, because lots of times the psychologist or psychiatric centers they may be going to, whether it be your local mental health department or what it may be, don't understand, you know, what the people need or what needs to be ruled out. And it can take, I admit it can take a little bit of time. It can take weeks. Sometimes it can even take months. And as I tell most people, a lot of these cases are not emergency cases. Unless somebody's bleeding out of every orifice of their body, their eyes, ears, nose, everything else, it's not an emergency. They may think it is because they're getting scared to death at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, but it's not an emergency right now. Nobody's life is under the gun, so to speak. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Do you find that... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
You have to triage these cases as well. And what I mean by that, you have to prioritize from the highest severity down to the lowest. Because there are some that will come in where they've got extremely bad stuff coming in, but it's more on the rarer side where they're getting, like, choked, beaten up, raped, strangled, bitten. You know, these type of cases are the more rarer of the cases. You get more stuff where they're just hearing phenomena in the house, strange stuff is going on. They're being oppressed, being affected maybe on the mental, psychological level. But those type of cases with the infestation can take time. It takes time. The real severe cases where they're being physically endangered are more rare.
Right. Do you find that the psychologists don't always want to help? Or, I mean, are they always forthcoming with helping to diagnose these people?
No. No. You will find that the realm is very much... not accepted. This is not what you would classify as a science per se. It can't be recreated in a laboratory on a consistent basis. They can't put it under a microscope. They can't, you know, identify different things with it. So it's not well accepted because it's not a science. You know, even with the ghost hunting, we're using methods that was not created for ghost hunting. You're using EMF meters, infrared things that it doesn't definitively determine whether or not you've got a spirit or not. It's
right.
Just found that it can show certain phenomenon better than other things can, so that's why the ghost hunting community has adopted it. There's nothing on, you know, that will show a class 5 ectoplasmin out there, you know, telling you that you definitively have a ghost or a spirit. And until we get to the point of that, where we can do that, there's always going to be some naysayers, skeptics, things of that nature.
Which, it's kind of interesting that psychologists or, you know, psychotherapists wouldn't be helpful in that, because a lot of their information of the different diseases sometimes are thought of as non-existent, or, you know, they just made that up, because there isn't anything that you could put on a slide, so to speak, to say, oh yeah, definitely this person's got schizophrenia.
Yeah, you are finding, I wouldn't say all of them, but a larger number of them now that's more open to this type of field and phenomena and so forth. I think mostly because so many of the clients, their clients these days, a certain percentage of them are talking about different stuff going on, and a lot of the medications that they give the people is not helping them to get rid of the voices and things of this nature, or helping them to eradicate the different hallucinations they supposedly are seeing. So a lot of them are looking more into this realm now. So it is a lot better than it was 10 years ago, but we still have a long way to go with that.
Yeah, there's a long way to go with a lot of different ones, a lot of different sciences. But it's just, excuse me, hold on. I just found it interesting that some of them would kind of just toss it aside, whereas, you know, they're kind of in the same boat, because certain things that they say or do is inadmissible in court, because that, their science, so to speak, is considered not real.
Mm-hmm. So do you find that...
Go ahead.
All right. Do you find that, like, psychiatrists and stuff will tend to over-medicate people, thinking that that's the problem and it'll help fix it, and that messes up what you need to do?
Well, unfortunately, the entire medical realm tends to treat not the core problem, but just the symptoms. And they've gotten into the habit of, you know, prescribing a pill for whatever problem a person has, you know, write you a script and, you know, see you later. And unfortunately, the psychiatric realm is much like that as well, you know, with Prozac and all the other plethora of drugs that they have for the different bipolar conditions, you know, paranoid schizophrenia and a host of others. I mean, they can just give a pill and it will usually give the people some relief on some level, but it doesn't necessarily get rid of the problem altogether. They have to go through many other means, but it's a quick fix right away, if that makes any sense.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. So earlier you had mentioned oppression, and previously we've talked to, I think it was in Bishop Long's interview, kind of the difference between oppression and actual possession. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of describe that, the difference again?
The oppression is where the demonic entities are working more on a psychological level to break the person down. They're trying to set them up, get them ready for the possession. What that means is that you may have a family, you know, perfectly fine, very strong, very healthy, but let's just say one of the kids, you know, get involved with a Ouija board and invite some things in that is not the best for them. Well, usually what the first thing starts happening is you start having phenomena going on in the house. You know, it kind of scares the kids. It may scare the mother. Maybe affects the dad, but you find the dad is probably the one affected the least most of the time. But it starts working on them slowly but surely. It starts making them question their sanity. It makes them get involved with things like the family dynamics, you know, how many arguments break out. Slowly they start get to the point where they're fighting over the smallest little things. They're getting angry. They're not working together as a family, because the family unit together, if they work together, they can defeat these problems, but very few families will stick it through and work through this. So the demonic work, you know, very much like a military strategy. They start working on the client. They start interfering with their sleep deprivation. You know, getting to the point where they stay up half the night, can't sleep because they're hearing knockings, rappings, voices, being touched, and a host of other things. I mean, I've had clients say they see stuff running around the house all night long, you know, music playing, voices all night long. After so many days of not sleeping anymore, they get grouchy, irritable. They're not doing well at work anymore. They're not getting along with anybody, so the process has begun. And eventually, when that process gets to the point that they're hammering them so hard that they would say, I'm just so tired of this, I'll do anything for this to stop, that's the point they want to set them up for possession, where they have the free will permission of the person to come in. They've worn them down. You know, possession is a point where the entity can come in free will. There's nothing to hinder the entity. Of course, you will find most of the possession cases are not what they call full possession or pure possession, as the Catholic Church terms it. That's where the entity has full control of the person 25 hours a day, 7 days a week. Those are very, very rare. Typically, the entity will come and go, which means it will step into the personality of the person, maybe be there for a few moments, hours, whatever it may be, and then will leave and go wherever they go to. And you'll kind of see the person come back to some degree, but you will find that it flitters in and out of their personality, making it very difficult sometimes for the psychologist and so forth to tell the difference, and for us to tell as well.
Right. So does the full possession, the difference between the full possession and the oppression, just how much of the body the demon or spirit has taken over? Is that the biggest thing?
The entity doesn't control the body at all.
Oh, okay. Just the...
It's more of psychological warfare that's going on during that time.
Okay.
It's setting them up, you know, like, as I said, you know, like sleep deprivation. You know, they're doing things like, you know, scaring the people, inserting trauma into the lives. They're getting them really where they're a nervous wreck. Setting them up to the point where they're such a nervous mental wreck that they can't fight these things anymore. And that's the point where they want to take possession at, is when the person's like saying, you know, dear God, I'm so tired of all this mess. I'll do anything for it to stop. Please, please. And that's where the entity will come in. It'll step in at that point because the person's not fighting anymore. Doesn't have the fortitude or the will to fight anymore. It's pretty much done give that up because it's so terrified and so tired. The entity will just come in, step in, and wreak havoc on the family and the person. Ultimately, if they have the chance, they want you dead because they hate us.
Right. So if there was a person who continued to fight it and didn't give up from the exhaustion, is there a chance the oppression could go away and they would be fine again? Or would the oppression stay there until they gave up?
You typically don't find that happen. They just...
Okay.
That the person, you know, just hangs in there so long that they need to give up. What you have to understand is usually more than one. There's many. You know, it's about like a tag team match.
Uh-huh.
When one can't achieve a certain thing, it will bring in other ones to affect the desired results. Many times this will be higher ups in the hierarchy than just the lowly demon itself. It'll be more like the majors or the captains of the army. And they can affect these achieved results much easier than the lower ones can.
Okay. Someone in the chat room said that he's noticed oppression resembles dissociative identity disorder.
Yes.
Do you agree with that?
It resembles that in some degrees, because when the demonic comes through the person, it will be like a totally different personality than what you're noticed to see, and like the person may be normally jovial, you know, maybe very upbeat. You know, when the demonic comes through it, you'll definitely notice a difference in how the person normally reacts. It may be very bitter, it may be very angry, it may be even very hostile, very foul mouthed, where the person normally would not, you know, use those type language in front of people, but here it becomes like a sailor, and it can go on from there even into the physical characteristics as well.
Sorry, our son's toy just went off, and it's a really loud one. I'm sorry about that. So, where was I? Oppression, exorcism. Okay. So, do you find that... I've completely lost my train of thought now. That totally threw me off. I'm sorry. How about we take a quick break here? We're going to take a little early break. That threw off my train of thought completely, and I've lost it. So I'm going to get it back. When we come back, I have a couple things, a question from the chat room, and a couple things to go from there. So everyone, thanks for listening, and you've been listening to Paratrinity Radio on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
Coming to Springfield, Illinois, February 19th and 20th, your lifeline from beyond the grave. Christopher Moon, paranormal investigator and president of Haunted Times magazine, will be there in person at Mystic Enchantments and Visions by JDR doing his personal telephone to the dead readings, sponsored by Spirit Rescue of Springfield. For a one-of-a-kind event with Christopher Moon and the telephone to the dead, give Mystic Enchantments a call at area code 217-726-9250 or Visions by JDR at 217-698-2776. Limited appointments available, so book now. Mystic Enchantments, 217-726-9250 or Visions by JDR at 217-698-2776.
This is Don Shy, the parapublicist, and you're listening to Paratrinity Radio, where nothing is sacred.
The views and opinions expressed by Paratrinity Radio and their guests are solely theirs and do not represent the views and opinions of ASPRN or its affiliates.
All right, we're back, and I'm better now. I apologize, everybody. I apologize, Father. I usually don't do that, but the loud toy just completely threw me off. So earlier in the chat room, someone had mentioned that they wanted to hear about the Brenton Arms case with Mike Brody. I know nothing about this, so I can't really ask you a question about it. Can you kind of talk about it?
I'm not familiar with that one either.
Okay.
I'm sorry to say that, but I don't know every case in the world out there. I mean, I have my own cases that I work. Those I'm very familiar with. The other investigators, I have no idea what goes on with them many times. I do know some, but that okay. one I'm not familiar with.
Okay. I was under the impression you had worked on it from the way they phrased the question. So, all right. That'll work. So you've been on Paranormal State, correct?
Yes, I have.
Just before we got on.
I think it was the third season I was in as well.
Okay. Just before we got on the air, I had actually watched the IM6 episode. I guess that's from the first season. And that was...
That one was from the third one.
Oh, was it? Okay. And I have to admit, that was a very intense episode. I mean, what happened, I just could not imagine seeing that or going through that in real life. It's just unbelievable. I mean, what was that like actually being there? I mean, I know you can't say too much because of confidentiality, but is it as...
Right. Due to confidentiality of client and with the show and so forth, I can only go into scant details. I can't go into specifics.
Right.
But, you know, the particular case happened in Illinois with a young lady that had been, like a lot of us out there, you know, doing EVPs and so forth. They had experienced some haunting different things in their home, you know, from different spirits that she said she's seen and heard. And so she attempted, after, you know, watching different ghost shows and all, to do EVPs to try to communicate. And then after that, things got much worse, you know, to the point where it was holding her down in the bathtub, trying to drown her. There's even reports of being sexually molested in the bathroom, in the bathtub. Had bite marks, or marks like,
wow,
you know, these type of things going on in the home. And this was like 24/7. You never knew when it was or wasn't going to happen. And they called me in, and what most people don't realize is from the one-hour show that they watched, that exorcism actually lasted 8 hours. It went on from, it started about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon and went on to about 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. So it was a very long, drawn-out ordeal. It was very physically tiring, very mentally, spiritually tiring. And unfortunately, these type cases don't always end with just doing an exorcism. Sometimes there's repercussions, things you have to work with in the long run with the clients, which I had to do with them. And it was a very, very, very tough case, I have to admit.
Do a lot of cases that you find where an exorcism is required, do they normally last 8 hours? Are they shorter or are they longer?
I would say if I had to give an average, I would say probably about 3 to 4 hours would be the average. So that one was much longer than the average one did. The entities that we encountered there was much stronger than usual. Took a bit more provocation, rituals, and so forth like that to remove. So it's not the norm. Although there are some that goes longer than even that one.
Have there been cases where it's gone days? Or is that even rare?
There's been documented cases throughout history where, you know, they went days at a time. They used to could find some on the internet where they went like a whole week at a time where they took it in sessions, working with the clients, you know, different clergy, priests, rotating out, working with the clients, so forth. So that's not anything unheard of.
So in that episode, the I am six is what she would say. And I know earlier you mentioned it's usually multiple. So was that six different demons inside of her? Is that what it was trying to say? Or does I am six mean something different?
One thing you have to understand is that demons are notorious liars. They will not tell you the truth. I've never had them tell me the truth before. So when they tell me a name, or there's so many of them, I take that with a grain of salt, because I can't depend on them to tell me the truth about it. They'll give you names of some entity from Balinese or somewhere you've never heard of before, but that may not be the name of them. Because typically when you get a name, that's what we call a break point. When they give you your name, then you have gained some ground there that you can remove them with. And why would they give you any means to remove them? That doesn't even make sense.
Right.
So when you get names, you know, just take it with a grain of salt. That doesn't necessarily mean you've got that particular demon or that entity. It may be just trying to, excuse my language, screw with you and get you off track.
Mm-hmm.
I typically like to deal with generalities, like, you know, during the particular session with her, the entity that was affecting her stopped her breathing. And in fact, you could even hear Chip Coffee saying, like, she's not breathing, she's not breathing. I was like, I was well aware of that. But what I did was I said, in the name of Jesus Christ, the demon that is affecting her upper respiratory system, I bind you and command you to stop and forbid you to interfere with her anymore. I didn't have to give a name. But even during the exorcism, you saw where she took a breath, let go of her. So I found generalities will cover a lot of different demons than just calling one specific name, if that makes any sense.
So a lot of times we've heard that you need to find out the name of the demon or demons that are possessing that person. I mean, how would you go about, since they lie, how would you go about finding out what their actual name or names were?
Well, the ritual that we use, and also that the Catholic Church and all uses, has a part in the ritual where it commands the demon to give the name, but that don't necessarily mean it's going to give you the name. And very few priests you will talk to will actually tell you that they've gotten demons to give them a name. But there is a part in there that it commands you to command it to give you the name.
Okay.
You have to be ready to try to deal with it, even though if you don't know a name. I mean, that's what I tell people. What do you do if you don't get a name? Where do you go there?
Right.
You have to continue on. I mean, think about it. We have, just because you ask somebody to do something, don't mean they're going to do it, do they?
No.
Yeah. No, they can be hard-headed, and the demons are very much like that as well. You can command them all day long, but I had one girl I can remember doing exorcism down in Florida on that I commanded to give a name, and she just looked at me and said, "I can't." And that's all she ever said. No matter how many times I commanded her, she would never tell me the name of the demon, or the demon would never speak and say its name. I had one time said it would prefer to take all the torment from its higher-ups than to take the torment of God. So it would just deal with what it had to deal with, and, you know, for it refused to give a name.
So is it more than likely not going to give the name to anybody, or is it the fact that you're religious and trying to push it out that it's refusing to give it to you, or is it always just going to lie no matter who you are?
Personally, I feel it's always going to lie no matter who you are.
Okay. So it's not the, I guess you could say, threat of Jesus Christ that's making it lie?
I think using the name of Jesus Christ gives us some authority through the church. I have to admit, people say, like, well, why do you, when you command in the name of Jesus Christ, it doesn't come out? I'm like, well, one, we're not Jesus. You know, when Jesus was around, you know, he could command something to come out, and it would, poof, it was gone. We have to work a little bit more than he did.
Right. So, I've heard lots of different definitions. How would you define a demon? Is it just an inhuman spirit? Is it a fallen angel? I mean...
Well, a lot of people in the paranormal field tend to use inhuman spirit very interchangeably with something that never lived in a human body. Mm-hmm. But I typically call an inhuman. Simply, what it was an angel that fell at the original rebellion with Satan and God. Satan and all his dominions underneath him, which some estimate between 7 and 15 million, some biblical scholars give those estimates. And they were kicked out of heaven, kicked out of his light, out of his grace, never again to be in his presence or to experience things like love, compassion. So, due to that fact, they can never be back there again. They hate God, they hate us, because we're put above them, and they couldn't understand why they should have to worship or bow down to us. We're lowly little beings. But, you know, through Jesus Christ, we were given the position of being joint heirs to heaven through him, through his sacrifice. And by the way, if any of your listeners are not Christian or anything, means I do apologize to you guys, but this is what I do. This is where I come from. I'm not condemning, putting you down or anything like that, but do understand this is what I've done for years, and this is what works with me. So whether you worship a crystal rock or anything like that, it doesn't matter to me. I don't put people down, but I have to do what works for me, if that makes sense.
These are your beliefs and your opinions.
Yeah, makes perfect sense.
Yep. And we'll take care of anyone that has a problem with that.
the angels were kicked out of heaven. They're much larger in nature than people give credence to. They think, like, oh, there's just a small realm of them. But, you know, when you say 7 to 15 million, that's quite vast. And people that's much more knowledgeable than me, some of the scholars with the Bible, you know, give those estimates, not me. Yeah, that means Satan fell, you know, all of his archangels, and there's a whole host of them. I'm not going to give any names to people out there, because some people get in trouble with those names.
Right.
Right.
But, you know, there's quite a few out there that roam the earth. People are doing different things now, you know, searching out their spirituality, you know, their path, the way they want to go. And sometimes they don't get on the right path of trying to do these things, or they make mistakes and so forth, and it opens up doors in their life where these things can come in. And due to the fact they can't experience anything without a body, and they hate us, you know, what better way to come in and experience the different things of life, you know, hatred, you know, killing, murder, these different type things than through us. And what they can't, they're not powerful enough to affect God himself. So the best way they can get back at him is by defiling his prized possessions, us. And when they possess us, that's exactly what they do. I've had clients say, you know, before they went through exorcism, they'd done things like take human excrement and rub it all over their bodies. They would eat bugs, all kind of horrible acts, stuff like that. I mean, a normal human being doesn't do those type things.
No.
No.
They, so. Not in my opinion, anyway.
They're not normal.
You enjoy doing that kind of stuff, hey, it's all for you.
Definitely not for me, though. But.
So, you had made the little disclaimer, this is your Christian belief, and that there are fallen angels, which, when I hear angel, I think that's more of a Christian, I don't want to
belief?
Say.
Belief?
Well, I have to say now that, you know, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, and all like that believe in angels, so it's not just Christianity.
Oh, okay. All right. But, as I was trying to say, if there's someone who doesn't have a religion or doesn't believe in demons, are they, or believe in Jesus Christ or believe in God, are they still likely to get possessed, or because they don't, they're not interfering in the demon being closer to God, that they won't bother with them as quickly?
Typically, most people will never experience this kind of stuff if they don't open up their lives and open up doors into their lives. That involves things like getting involved in different systems where you're conjuring, evoking, invoking different entities that you have no idea who they are, doing things like seances, Ouija boards where you're communicating with spirits that you have no idea who the crap they are, because 9 times out of 10, they're not going to tell you the truth. They're going to pretend to be your long-lost little son that passed away, or your husband that you loved dearly for 30 years. They're going to pretend to be him so they can get into your life. And then they'll start weaving this little story about, you know, telling you things that only that person would know because they've been around for thousands of years. And they're going to know those type pieces of information. So they're going to build what you perceive as trust. And then, you know, eventually you're going to say, like, well, show yourself to me, you know, appear in the house, or, you know, make it where I can see you. Boom. Mm-hmm. They have your free will permission to be there. And that's usually when things start going south real quick.
So what every paranormal investigator I know does, opens up the door during their EVP session then.
Yes. It's a form of communication. And that's another thing I tell most investigators, is that so many out there don't do any form of protection to protect them, their families, or their other investigators or their team from taking home some little presents.
What's the best way to protect yourself and your team before an investigation? Just a simple prayer? Or
well, is there... you know, a lot of people don't think much of prayer, but, you know, words have power.
Right.
A simple little prayer before the investigation, you know, whether you're Christian or not, I tell people, I say, you know, if it will keep something from coming home, terrorizing you, your family, your kids, causing all kind of trauma, disharmony, discord in your life, wouldn't it be worth it to you just to, you know, do a little 2-minute little prayer right there with your people? And I tell people, if they don't want to be involved in it, they don't have to be. They can walk off somewhere else and not be involved in our little prayer session. But doing something like that, like St. Michael prayer, St. Benedict prayer, has been used for centuries, found to be very effective. In fact, you can get little cards, put them in your pocket or your billfold, that you can read them off. You can get other little things like medallions, icons that you can wear that can help to protect different members of the family. But some people do like to do this. Some people don't really care for them because they're not Christian, so it's just a personal preference on that.
So if a non, how would a non-religious person protect themselves? same way, or because they don't believe, does that not do anything?
Well, I tell most people, you know, the crucifixes, the icons and stuff like that, you don't have to believe in them. I mean, it helps. But once they've been blessed, they've been imparted, you know, holy energy into that item that will protect you. So you don't necessarily have to believe. You don't have to believe in a demon. They believe in you, but you don't have to believe in them for them to affect you.
Okay. Yeah, that was always something I wondered. How much faith and belief do you need in order for them to affect you?
Well, so, as I tell most people, you don't have to believe in demons. They can still affect you.
Okay. So when a paranormal group goes in and does a EVP session, are they opening the door for the demon to attach to them, their person, or could the demon come into the house and attach to anybody?
Well, actually, they're opening up the door for any entity that they're speaking to, because it's about like, as I tell during my lectures, it's about like you putting a sign out in front of your house saying, free beer, free food. You don't know who's going to show up, do you?
Right.
And it's the same way here. When you put a call out into the unknown, you don't know if Uncle Fred's going to show up, or you don't know if the dens of hell's going to show up. You take that chance. And that's what I tell people. When you go to these, like, what's considered friendly little haunts, you know, like places that's known to have, you know, human spirits, you know, nothing negative at, well, just because it's known to have that don't mean when you do that EVP session that something else ain't going to show up on you. Because I've been at a number of these different real known historical haunts, different places like that, where lo and behold, nothing evil's ever been there, but it showed up that night. Our investigators got a problem, one of the first ones to ever experience something there. So when you do communication like that, you know, you do have to be careful and do some form of protection to help protect yourself. You can't just do EVPs and not come out unscathed sooner or later. It's a numbers game. You do enough type cases, sooner or later you're going to run across a bad case. I don't care how well you try to just work nothing but good cases, you're going to run across a negative someone sooner or later.
So, speaking of that, how long have you been doing exorcisms, approximately?
I've been involved in the paranormal field for over 13 years. I've been doing deliverances, exorcisms, so forth like that, probably for the past 8 years. I've been ordained as a priest for the past six, but I was involved as a layperson before that, working with different denominations and so forth with cases and everything else, so about 8 years.
And how many actual exorcisms have you witnessed or performed? Approximately.
Between the ones where I have been assisting, not actually doing the exorcism myself, but, you know, assisting other clergy.
Right.
You know, prayer and so forth like that, and doing my own, over 100.
Oh, wow. Is that all over the place and different countries and everything?
It's all over the country. Even, as I said, you know, I do assist and consult with groups from all the way around the world. And you know, the biggest part of my work now is I'm all the time getting emails and calls from other investigative groups saying they've got what they think is a demonic case and they need my help on it. So I have to work remotely long distance a lot these days.
How does that work? Are you just advising them on what to do, or finding other clergy to help them, or can you actually do something to help them from where you are?
Well, it's a little bit of all of it. Most of the times I will talk to the people, interview their clients, kind of get a feel for what's going on there, you know, give my 2 cents worth, you know, based upon the experience over the years that I've gained, you know, tell them what I think it may sound like and give them some recommendations of what they may need to do. The hardest thing I have to do these days is tell investigators that you need to get clergy or you need to get someone else. You don't need to be involved on this case. You need to get somebody else that's more qualified to work it, because so many people now think it's a badge of honor to be a demonologist. You know, they read a book. You know, they want to do this, but they don't think anything about their family, their lives, the members of their group that's going to be affected by this, or let alone the client themselves. So it turns into a nasty little pie sometimes. I tell most people, I said, you know, you really need to consider your life before you decide to get involved in this work, because once you step across the line, you can't come back. These entities will remember you 100 years down the road. I've run into different clients where the demon has come through and says, I know you, I remember you, but they don't say it quite so nicely. I've had repercussions in my life, even as clergy. I mean, especially in my beginning years, you know, I had stuff come home with me with cases I've been involved in. You know, my poor animals, you know, my children has experienced some of this stuff. So, you know, you're not going to go through this work unscathed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I tell most investigators, think about that really hard before you get involved in this kind of work.
So I'm a part of a paranormal investigation team, and most of our cases are private residences. Just they hear something knocking, or they hear voices, they hear footsteps, stuff like that. Just the standard small, not much to really, nothing to make you think it's anything evil per se.
Right.
So when we go in there and we're doing these EVP sessions asking for the spirit to show themselves, and we don't say a prayer before we go in, are we just completely opening up that door for anything else to come through?
Yes.
And endangering the homeowners?
Yes. Because you're pretty much putting a sign out in front of the house, as I said, free beer, free food. You're putting that sign out there asking anything or everything to come in.
Okay. I guess I won't say my group's name.
There's a lot of groups out there that does that. They don't think about it. They'll say things like, is there any spirits around that want to communicate with us? Will you please talk to us? These type of things. They're not giving any specific questions like, you know, will Rosemary talk to us? You know, will so-and-so general blah, blah, blah? You know, they're just putting the call out into the unknown.
Mm-hmm. So if you...
Go ahead.
If you know that, say, Uncle Fred is one haunting the place, and you ask for Uncle Fred to talk to you, that's not opening the door for other things?
Sure, specific. Because they will pretend to be something else. As I said, a prayer before you do EVP sessions, like, you know, just asking God to not let anything come through, malevolent, negative, demonic, however you want to term it. You know, asking for angels to surround you with their swords, cover you with their light and their love, preventing anything to attach to you, your members, the family. These type of things can curtail some of that stuff.
Okay.
It takes a little bit of practice in doing stuff like that. You don't have to believe that God or the angels exist. It don't matter if they exist, just as long as whatever you ask for works.
Okay.
That's good to know.
Just trying to compute all that.
Yeah, that's a lot to compute. I mean, because you watch so many different TV shows or you see movies, and I mean, it's either one or the other where, you know, they say, is anybody here that would like to talk to us? And then you never hear about the repercussions afterwards.
Right.
Or you get things like The Exorcist, where she touched a Ouija board and, you know, she was inhabited by demons.
You know, but you get so many different, you know, runs of the gamut, you know, where there's just a little ghost that comes around every so often, you know, nothing bad, all the way to the ones where, as I said, they're being touched, being traumatized, seeing all kind of horrible things in their homes, the children. And what I tell most investigators out there these days is that, you know, let's just say you get something like that, and you bring it back home. Well, you know, there's always the possibility, and people don't realize this, that it can become a generational type haunting where it's passed down through your family line.
Wow.
To your next of kin. So it's kind of like the gift that keeps on giving in many, many ways. Just because you open the door up, even in the Bible it says we pay for the sins of our forefathers.
Yes.
So that's what they mean.
So when you do these exorcisms, or, you know, people are plagued by these different demons or just, you know, mean-spirited spirits, would you ever recommend for them to just move out of their house? Or?
Oh, sometimes I have done that, especially, well, let's differentiate one thing. People think like, oh, the evil spirits, you know, they're in the house and all like that. Well, you have haunted places and you have haunted people. You know, sometimes maybe you did move into a house where the previous tenants and all, you know, were practicing Satanistic type rituals and all, you know, they're in the house, you know, 23 times in the past year or whatever. And you're kind of an innocent victim moving in there and experience, you know, get to experience all the good, bad, and the ugly there. But sometimes people have spirits attached to themselves. You don't move into haunted house after haunted house after haunted house after haunted house. That's more than likely an attachment of the person. You know,
okay.
you just don't move into 15 houses in a row where you're experiencing all kind of horrible things in your family, you know, being traumatized and so forth. It just don't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, you know, more likely it's going to have to be broken off the person. You know, places can be dealt with easier sometimes than people can. Did I answer your question?
Yes, you did.
So, out of all hauntings, what percentage do you think are, in your opinion, are actually demonic hauntings as opposed to just either a regular
Uncle Fred
spirit or an Uncle Fred?
I would say, in my experience over the years with different cases, I would say about 30%.
Huh. That's a higher number than I expected. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot more than I would have thought. It always seems like it would be, you know, again, depending on what you're reading or what you're watching. I mean, it just seems like either a really small number, like way less than 30, or just every other person.
Well, you have to consider too, as you said, it depends on what you're reading or what you're watching, because, you know, a lot of the shows out there don't want to talk about these type entities.
Right.
You know, they don't want to, you know, say anything about that. You know, they want to go with all the nice, good and fluffy little human spirit stuff like that. And you've got other shows that go nothing but the negative way, and everything they talk about is nothing but demons, demons, demons. But I'll be the first one to tell you, I don't believe there's a demon under every bush out there.
Right.
You know, I've had a number of cases where I tell people, I said, I don't think you've got any more than, you know, mom and pop ghosts running around the house. I don't think you've got no demons there. You know, no need to bring in clergy, you know, flailing all the holy water around. You know, I tell a number of clients, you know, the best thing you can do is talk to these things, but don't communicate with them. Just tell, you know, that when you get that feeling, you know, feeling like the spirit's around, which most of the clients say, yeah. I said, just talk to it like you were talking to your brother. Tell it it's passed on. It is no longer living. It doesn't belong there. That it's causing problems with you, your family, your household. That would it please go toward the light? You know, cross on over. I tell them to say that because a lot of times the spirit don't know where you're talking about to go, but they can see the light.
Right.
And many, I would say in about 50% of cases that works. But, and a number of the other cases it don't.
So in the cases that doesn't, what would you recommend the family to do? Just keep kind of saying it? Or is there something else that you would have them do?
Well, I do recommend sometimes praying, asking for God to send his angels to help guide these misguided human spirits and inhuman spirits to go over. Sometimes that will help them. They'll come and escort the human spirit over to the other side. That don't always work, but it can help.
Uh, Okay. It's a little after 2 o'clock, 12 o'clock, not 2 o'clock. So we're gonna go to our next break. I think this is like about a 5 minute break. Play a short song and a couple of commercials. I would like to thank everyone out in the chat room for listening, everyone else who's listening that's not in the chat room, and invite all of you to come over to asprn.com/studiob.html and chat with us. And if you have any questions, you can put them up in the chat room or private message them to Chains of Desire Christopher in the chat room, and he will get them to us for Father Calder. And you've been listening to Paratrinity Radio, right here on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
Hey, this is Russ from Residual Hauntings Live. As some of you may know, I have run a paranormal group and website for several years. After walking through unwelcoming buildings and ominous cemeteries at night, the biggest challenge I've faced has been finding quality website hosting on a very tight budget. HostYourGhost.com is a high-quality hosting company specifically serving the paranormal community. All HostYourGhost plans include ad-free hosting, email accounts, and an easy-to-use control panel. With packages starting at just $4.99 a month, we scare away the competition. So stop watching your money vaporize and let us host your ghost at HostYourGhost.com.
This is Marla Brooks, host of that bewitching show, Stirring the Cauldron. And you're stirring it up right now with Michael and Ellie on Paratrinity Radio, where nothing is sacred.
The views and opinions expressed by Paratrinity Radio and their guests are solely theirs and do not represent the views and opinions of ASPRN or its affiliates.
All right, and we're back. And tonight we're talking to Father Calder, and we've been talking a lot about exorcisms and demons, and I'm going to get off that subject for a little while here, if you don't mind, and kind of more of what started us on this show, why we started this show, some of the little questions we had when we got started, and I kind of want your opinion. So I guess to start, do you, and this is coming from your Christian background, but do you feel that ghosts are, like, do you feel you need religion for there to be ghost paranormal activity? Do you need a god, an afterlife, or any sort of paranormal activity to exist?
That's a loaded question. I would say to be a ghost hunter, you don't necessarily need all that, but as I told you before, if you work these cases long enough, you're going to run into the bad ones. And the bad ones, you're not going to be able to get rid of by your lonesome. You're going to have some kind of base, some kind of faith system, something that you believe in, whether it's a rock, whatever it may be. You know, personally, I've never seen a rock drive out a demon, but, you know, that's just my personal opinion, of course.
Right.
You're going to have some basic core something, or excuse my language, you're going to get your ass handed to you. It's not going to be just so cut and dried.
Right.
These entities have been around for thousands of years. They know how us human beings work. They know how to push our buttons. So they're already ahead of you on the game.
So a demon being what it is, the fallen angel, that is a, I guess you could say, a theological being, correct?
A theological what?
Entity.
Yes. What most people don't understand out there is that when the angels fell, God never stripped them of their powers. They still have their innate abilities, each and every one, whatever that may be, but they're just using it for dark purposes now. It's not meant to be used for good, loving purposes. So due to that fact, you as a human being need the help of some being, some entity divine, that can assist you in your work of doing that. You by yourself cannot do this. I mean, I don't care how much you circulate your chakras and everything else, you know, you're limited in what you can do.
Right.
So, what about a non-demonic entity? Just a spirit, as I guess most people would think of them, it's someone that's passed on who has, say, unfinished business on this earth.
Well, that exists as well. As I tell people, we have free will. God gave us free will. And due to that fact, it doesn't go away when we die. We get very attached to our personal possessions, our houses, our homes, our kids, our children, our loved ones. You know, we want to make sure they're okay, so we tend to hang around places that we used to exist for 50, 60, 70 years, or maybe even shorter than that. And due to that fact, you make a conscious free will decision not to move on. You have the, you can make the decision like, okay, I'm not living anymore, I can move on. Or you can decide to stay there. But there are some of them out there that's trapped where they're at because they think they're still living, they're continuing life as normal. I had a case a number of years ago where we went to what used to be a schoolhouse, but people were living in it now. It had been remodeled and everything, and the family was living there, but they experienced all kind of stuff, lights turning on, things of that nature. And there was an old man that used to live there. And they said he liked to show up at parties because he was always known to be, you know, liking where there's a lot of people at, a very social person. Mm-hmm. And he died in the house back during the night. I can remember turning off ceiling fans, then going back and finding them on again. I'd mention something to the owners, and they say, oh, yeah, he does that all the time. And they said that in the morning time, about 6 o'clock in the morning, you'd hear like what sounds like sounds from the kitchen of someone getting up, rattling pots and pans, you know, like doing dishes, you know, cooking breakfast, that type of thing. Then about 7:45, you'd hear what sounded like the front door opening, then shutting. Then you wouldn't hear nothing else for the rest of the day till about 5 or 6 o'clock. Then you'd hear the door opening, shutting, and stuff would go on during the evening time, which this was the normal life of the old man that used to live there.
Mm-hmm.
He was going about his normal daily activities. I don't know whether he knew he was dead or not, but eventually we got the phenomena stopped by speaking to him, asking him to cross over and so forth, that he was bothering and scaring the children and everything else. But that just goes to show you that we hang around for a lot of different reasons, not necessarily the best ones.
So do you think that that's the spirit of him hanging around, not knowing he's dead and doing all that, or just energy imprinted, just a residual energy imprinted in the, I guess you could say, the field that just keeps replaying because it's burned into this field?
I have seen some residual haunting. You especially see that where the person done the same thing day after day, hour after hour. I know I had one where a lady was seen walking down the road, but she walked miles every day. She'd done it every single day for about 20 years. You know, whether that was a residual haunting imprinted in the environment, or whether that was actually the ghost of her, I can't tell you. I'm not sure about that. There's no way for us to differentiate that.
Right.
Right. So what makes them finally realize that they're dead and they go over? I mean, I wouldn't imagine that they just wake up and say, oh, crap, I'm dead.
Well, as I tell most of the clients, I tell them, when you talk to these things and tell it that the house is no longer theirs, that they mean to go on to the light where their loved ones are, and stuff like that, I said, think about it, we as human beings are very hard-headed.
You're breaking up real bad.
Not much I can do about that.
Saying I missed the answer there.
But just because you tell something one or two or three times don't mean they're going to do it. And it's the same thing with the spirits as well. Sometimes you may have to do it a half a dozen times or more to get any results. And sometimes you won't ever get no results because they're just not going to do it. They're too damn hard-headed to do anything. They're just happy where they're at. They continue to be stuck here or living here as they think they're doing sometimes. So sometimes it's not a matter of what you want. Sometimes it's a matter of what the spirit decides to do. And I many times will ask in prayers and so forth that the angels will come to help escort them, help guide them, you know, influence and things like that. Sometimes when you've got a real hard-headed spirit, that can be effective.
Okay.
I personally think they need to go where they need to go. We need to be where we need to be. Now, if you love spirits running around your house all the time causing all kind of problems, then fine and dandy. And there are some people out there, especially with the surgence of, you know, new age type belief systems and everything else, they think, oh, I don't want to scare them off. I don't want to run them off. Well, that's fine. They're with the spirits then.
Right. So, there was a question in the chat room. I think you might have answered this already, but I want to get it out there just in case. How many cases have you experienced where the ghost was being suppressed by a demonic entity? I'm thinking you had said about 100. Is that correct?
I haven't asked. You talking about where the demon is controlling the human spirit?
I think they were asking more like how, I guess, a ghost. How many cases have a ghost where a ghost is held by a demon? And I guess they can't pass over because they're being held back.
I would say probably about 10 over the years. You will find sometimes now, but you have to understand the demon feeds off of our suffering, you know, torment, things like this. And the human spirit, if it can keep it there, it can feed off of its energy. So it's kind of a food source for it, so to speak. But that's not in all cases. Sometimes they'll hide behind the human spirit, because a lot of the stuff the human spirit is doing, they will say, okay, well, I can do this and I can do that, and they won't set off the alarms where the people think it's a demon or something really nasty in the house, so they can kind of hide behind the human spirit. Sometimes you will find that some of the really nasty human spirits, and this is very, very rare, but you will find that they will be in league with the demonic, because the demonic will, in exchange for working with them, will give them different abilities, different capabilities, things of that nature. So in some rare, rare cases, you will find they work together.
What would cause them to work together?
Do what?
What would cause them to want to work together?
As I said, sometimes some of the human spirits were really, really mean, evil people in their human lives, and usually those type of people sometimes will make that kind of transition or deal.
Okay.
But I haven't found that normal, healthy human spirits make that kind of deal, because most times they're terrified the crap out of the demonic. They won't be there at the same time.
Right. Well, it makes sense. I mean, I would be terrified.
Most normal people and spirits would be.
All right. Well, we're coming up to the end of the show here. We have a little bit of time left, and I wanted to give you the mic for the last couple of minutes here and give a plug for whatever you do, or websites, or anything you want to tell everyone. Just, you've got free rein.
Okay, I appreciate that. I, you know, work with people from all around the world, you know, and as I said, the wonderful power of the internet has made that possible. The best way to contact me is either through Facebook, which everybody seems to be on now,
yep,
or MySpace, which is myspace.com/AndrewCalder. I also have an email address, director@georgiaparanormal.com. I work a number of events around the country that people can see me at. I also do lectures talking about this stuff in depth and how to for the investigator to protect themselves. One of the ones we're going to be working at is going to be the Texas Ghost Show on March 13th in Beaumont, Texas. If y'all would like to come out, we'd be happy to see you. We also offer different things like blessed medallions, icons for those people that's interested in them, if you don't have any. We also will be working the latter part of this month at Phenomenology 102 in Gettysburg, famous haunted Gettysburg. If anybody has the free time and ability to come out, there'll be a host of people there, so I'm really looking forward to being there.
And Gettysburg is a place.
Say what?
Gettysburg is an awesome place.
Yeah, but I still won't stand on those gratings.
Stand on what?
The gratings, the little thingies for the sewers. I can't do it.
We took a ghost tour there once, and the lady said that if you stand on the grating, it said that a hand will reach up and pull on your pants leg. Now that I'm more knowledge in the paranormal, I'm not sure with how much I believe that would really happen, but it is kind of a freak.
It's always interesting to hear some of the urban legends you hear about some of the places.
Oh, it wasn't the ghost reaching up grabbing my pants leg that scares me. It's just I don't like grates.
Like you might fall from?
Yes.
That's not a go ahead.
Go ahead. Okay. Bishop Long just sent me a private message and said to let you know he says hi. And we just talked to him a couple of weeks ago, and he said hi then too. So I wanted to put that out there.
Well, otherwise, tell him I said hello because he's a friend of mine as well.
I'm under the impression he's listening right now. So
he probably is. He said he would be listening tonight.
Yeah.
And Matt Oxley as well says hello.
Okay.
Got all your friends out there listening to you.
Well, it depends on what friends you're talking about.
I'm sure there's some.
I have them in the physical realm and on the other realm as well, so.
And I'm sure there are some people out there that are listening that aren't really friends. But I wanted to say thank you very much for taking the time to come on tonight.
Well, I'm glad you guys invited me to come on.
Oh, it is our pleasure.
I hope I didn't, scare nobody too badly out there.
I just hope I never run into what I saw on the Paranormal State episode.
It's better to be prepared. Knowledge in this area can save you a lot of heartache and problems. I feel my biggest job is to try to educate as much as I can.
Yeah. So I think that's the best thing you can do.
If
anybody has any problems, my contact information I just told you is the best way to contact me. So I'm willing to work with people and help them any way that I can.
Okay. And if anyone out there listening doesn't know how to contact him or can't find him, you can email us and I can forward you his Facebook page, or I will contact him and forward you more information as needed. So we can help you out too. What was I going to say? I was going to say something.
Can't read your mind.
But yes, thank you very much once again. I know it's late, it's a long show, and this has been excellent. I've learned a lot, I've talked to other demonologists and exorcists, and every time I learn something new, and it's been a lot of fun.
Well, like I said, knowledge is key here. The best thing I can tell most of the investigators out there, do yourself a little favor and study up some on this stuff, you know, come to lectures, different things like that, because, you know, just one little key bit of information can keep you from getting involved on a case that really could cause you a lot of problems, you and your family. I'm not trying to dissuade anybody from doing ghost hunting by no means, but these are definitely cases that the average ghost hunter out there does not want to get involved with.
Mm-hmm.
Especially possession cases. Ghost hunters do not need to be involved with them.
It is important for everybody to understand that, you know, as much fun and games as it seems on TV shows or when you're reading it, that they need to be prepared for the consequences.
Definitely. As I said, you know, even as clergy myself, you know, working these type of cases, they recognize you, you know, because you're a potential path of help for these people. And they don't want the people to get any type of help. So even you as an investigator, they're going to, like, you know, they're going to mark you with a target on you. And it's not unusual to go home, have stuff show up at your home, you know, strange phone calls, strange recordings on answering machines,
mm-hmm.
you know, all kinds of stuff like that. And not to mention, you know, what your family can suffer as well. So I tell them, you know, do yourself a favor and do a little bit of study and knowledge before you go running into these type cases.
Right.
So, real quick, I know that there are tons and tons of people out there that claim to be a demonologist. In your opinion, do you think the majority of them, I mean, I don't want to get you in trouble or get people to hate you or anything, but do you think many of them...
I'll probably piss somebody off out there, excuse my language.
You're fine.
Do you think the majority of those people that claim to be demonologists don't know half of what they should know or need to know to do what they're doing?
You know, used to 10 years ago, if there wasn't anybody out there doing these cases except people like me and John Zaffis, I mean, we were the only ones. Nobody wanted to touch these cases with a 10-foot pole. They wanted you to take them over and, you know, kind of take them off their hands. Now, everybody wants to work these cases.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to, you know, say, like, yeah, we got a demonologist on our team. Yeah, we work these demonic cases. I'm going, like, okay, where'd you get your experience from? Oh, I had a demonic haunting when I was a kid. Well, just because you had a demonic haunting or read a book don't qualify you as a demonologist. Piss anybody off out there, I'm sorry. You know, just because you've been through it don't mean you know everything there is to know about this realm.
Right.
You know, you need to go through training.
Well, that's like, you know, trying to going to a plastic surgeon who has never even gone to medical school. You wouldn't do that.
You read a book.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or you had a lot of surgery yourself.
Well, I'm not, nothing against, you know, plastic surgery and so forth, but like, you know, people picking up a book and reading about it or reading The Demonologist or something of that nature, a host of other books is out there now, doesn't qualify you to work these type of cases. You need to be
so how do you go about... How do you go about getting training for this? Is it through
most
the
people
church?
Aren't going to want to do that, because to be a religious demonologist, you have to go through the church.
Okay.
You're gonna have to be ordained, go through that type of training, have relationships with archbishops, things of that nature. You know, there's not a white witch of the West on every corner out there that knows how to work this kind of stuff that you can learn from, you know, what you want to learn.
Right.
You know, it takes a dedication of yourself and your life to do this kind of work. It's not something you just pick up and, you know, kind of throw on the table when you want to.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have people calling you. You're going to have people emailing you all the time. Most people don't realize how prevalent these cases are out there. There's quite a few of them out there. You got people calling you at 4 o'clock in the morning. They're distraught. They're scared. They're terrified. The whole family's, you know, a mess. They're being attacked. They're being slapped. They're being levitated across the room. I can remember one case where they said a black Hulk-like figure was hitting the pillars in the house, shaking the entire house at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
You know,
that's terrifying.
Yeah, it is. So,
mm-hmm.
tell folks about this when you go running into it.
So how would you suggest to folks, what's the best piece of advice on finding the proper demonologist, the right demonologist? What sort of credentials should you look for in a person?
The first thing I would look for, is, are they self-published? Did they print their own book about their experience or what their knowledge is and everything else? Do they have any experience in the paranormal realm besides just demons? Do they know what to look for when they see a human spirit or a normal haunting?
Mm-hmm.
Have they been through a demonic haunting themselves? I mean, that's good, fine, and dandy. But, just because, like we said a doctor a while ago, just because he had brain cancer at one time, doesn't make him an expert in that area, does it?
No.
Find out if, they're drawing upon their past experience. See if anybody else knows them in the field. Usually folks like me, John, different people like that, we know the other people in the field.
Right.
See if anybody else knows them. If they're a little unknown, be very careful. Because there's a lot of self-proclaimed demonologists now.
Yeah.
Right. So references are an excellent way to go about determining credibility.
Definitely.
That makes sense. Right. And they can always just call you. I mean, we know you're good at it. Just call you.
I'm in the southeast here. It makes it kind of difficult when you've got an exorcism that needs to be done in Washington State or something like that. I mean, I'm willing to go to those places, but a lot of these clients are just not willing to pay your expenses to go there. And I'm a humble little priest that has to work like everybody else.
Right.
I have to pay bills and everything else. I can't afford to pay for an airplane fare every time somebody calls on the phone or sends me an email.
Right.
And a lot of times these cases will totally fall apart when you ask them to help you out to get there. I mean, I don't mean to be a naysayer, but life is life.
Right.
It's
last time I checked, the airlines don't give you free airfare.
Of course not. All right. Well, we're a little past 12:30 here, so that pretty much brings us to the end of the show. If you don't mind, I'd like to keep you on the line till the end so I can say my own special thank yous off air.
Okay.
Otherwise, thanks again for coming on, and all of our listeners, thank you very much for tuning in tonight. I hope you've enjoyed our special Valentine's Day episode. And I hope you have a wonderful Valentine's Day tomorrow. If you do that, have a great February 14th tomorrow.
Yes, and I hope that everybody has learned from this episode how to show your hubbies and wives. Or if you have both, then, you need some help. But, how to show them that you love them. And always come back every February 14th, and we'll give you a little more information about how to treat that loved one in your life.
Yes. Don't have much to reply to that. So. I think we're done.
We're good. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you. Like I said, next week we have Matt Oxley on the show. He's been in the chat room. He's an atheist. It should be a great show. We're going to go into some good debating with him and everything. So looking forward to that. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a great night. Great Valentine's Day. You've been listening to Paratrinity Radio, where nothing is sacred.
Tune in next Saturday night at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to Paratrinity Radio with Mike and Ellie. Paratrinity Radio, where nothing is sacred, right here on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.